from MLU headquarters in Philadelphia.
You should go underneath it.
Oh, way out deep!
This is Cleats and Cuffs.
Hit man! Oh, what a one! Murray!
Everything ultimate, from the field to the boardroom.
Hey, you got this?
There?
Oh, yes!
Hello,
Mr. Graham!
Welcome to Cleats and Cufflinks. We are back after a brief hiatus for the new year where we took a little break to reflect on what we've done, resolve to do things differently, and move forward into 2016. I'm here today with Billy Sickles. He is a member of the team here at MLU in terms of a partnership development associate. And he is also, of course, an offensive cutter for the Philadelphia Spinners. Thanks for joining us, Billy.
Thanks for having me, Nick. Last time I was on Cleats was when we were in the old office, and I did the podcast with Greg about New York tryouts. So a little bit different of a setting, but glad to be on board with you.
A little bit of a change. That's true. Yeah, you were down in the was that down in the basement? Was
it
that
was.
In our basement recording studio?
It was a little bit chillier than it is here.
Good old Leopard Street. And one misses that, you know. So we're here today. We're at the beginning of 2016. Tryouts are getting underway. Players are starting to get back on board. We got coaches and getting ready with their plans for the year. And you guys, the Spinners, we're going to refer to you in the Spinners role for now. We'll get to the MLU role later. But in terms of your role with the Spinners, you guys just had your first tryout at Maple Zone, I believe,
right.
Just this past Saturday, correct?
Yeah. It was really exciting to be back out there. Last year, I remember being much more nervous. So it was the same level of excitement, but in a different way. This year, having a little bit more familiarity with everyone, just seeing who's coming out, who's coming back, that sort of thing. But definitely still excited to be there.
It's a lot different being a rookie and then being a rookie of the year. Those are two very different positions, are they not? Like a rookie, you're coming in and walk into those trials, maybe a little nervous. You don't know what you're getting into.
Right, yeah. Last year, just wanted to come in and show what I was, you know, able to do on the field and work on a roster spot. And this year, you know, making sure that I still have that spot on the O-line as a cutter, or if there's another role for me, whatever that may be.
Now, of course, you know, returning players like the coaches and their staff, they know a lot of the people that they're going to be bringing back.
Right.
So why these tryouts? You know, I think that in the league office, like, we have our opinion on it. I'm sure the coaches have their opinion. But each team runs these tryouts, and the philosophy behind it is can't necessarily be that the coaches can't form a team without kind of a big open tryout scenario because they clearly know a lot of the players in the area. What do you think the benefit is of having this kind of open tryout setup?
I think it's a few things. You know, some people are very well known in the ultimate community, having played at a big school or having played club for a long time or for another pro team. But I think it gives a fair opportunity and equal playing field for some of those guys who, in my case, I guess, went to lesser known schools, who weren't, you know, very heavily touted coming out of school or haven't played high-level club that much. It gives them a chance to showcase what they can do on a higher level and at the same time show, you know, what sort of preparation went into it and, you know, trying to peak at the right time for that tryout.
Excellent. Yeah, I've often thought that, you know, and I've said this before on Cleats and Cufflinks and in other times, that the environment of Ultimate, such as it is now, lends itself to the idea that there's going to be players out there who aren't necessarily playing high-level club, and not because they aren't capable of it, but because either their work circumstances or their financial circumstances
right.
or just the time they're able to devote to it just isn't there. So they're not able to commit to these high-level club teams and do the kinds of, you know, full weekend traveling, all that stuff. And yet they may find this kind of format that we have in the MLU and in Pro Ultimate in general to be one that they're capable of undertaking. And as a result, these tryouts give them an opportunity to show up and prove that they belong here without the kind of resume that you might have from some of the players who have been really playing a ton of Ultimate at kind of a high level for a long time.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And I think you saw that last year with a lot of the new guys that kind of came on board. Between me and the other rookies, You know, we're a little bit younger than some of the veterans on the team. Almost all of us hadn't really played at a, you know, nationals level college team or on a nationals level club team yet. But I think, you know, last year proved that, you know, you can kind of find those players in unlikely places. And, you know, sometimes those guys have much more to prove than the guys who can kind of rest on their laurels.
And that's the thing. I mean, that the tryout is the environment for that, right? Like, this is the opportunity to do that. You said you also saw some you saw some young kids out this time around. And for coming from you, from my perspective, a young kid yourself, like, what are we talking about here?
Yeah, so, you know, last year was my first year out of college. So I, you know, I knew some guys that were my grade who had just graduated and who were at the tryouts. And then this year, I was talking to a few guys from North Jersey who made the trip down, and they said they graduated in 2013. So I assumed that that meant college. But that actually meant high school. So they were still in college, graduating in 2017. Which made me feel old, I guess. But at the same time, you know, it was very encouraging because you know that there's younger guys who were in the same position you were, who were, you know, vying for your spot and nipping at everyone's heels.
Yeah, I mean, that I think is what's incredible here is that, you know, I can only imagine we're going to see more and more of those kids coming out to these tryouts. But people are playing a lot earlier than they used to. I know you played in high school, though.
Right.
Which, you know, is becoming more common, but you're young. So tell me a little bit about your high school experience. I'm kind of curious about
sure.
that.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I was a soccer player for a very long time. I played year-round. And then my senior year in 2010, in the fall, was sort of my last go-around for soccer. And I had a few buddies on the Westfield team that played and knew that I was pretty athletic and said, hey, you know, come play with us for the spring. And I was fortunate enough to have a coach there in place, a pretty good team environment there. But I took all of that sort of competitiveness that I found in soccer and sort of the, I guess, tactics from soccer and applied them as best I could to ultimate. So I wasn't a very good thrower, but they just told me to, you know, run deep and be aggressive on D, and that's kind of, you know, where I found my spot. So. Yeah, I mean, that's where I started, and then played at St. Joe's for 4 years. Was the captain for starting my sophomore year, just having some sort of experience. So, you know, I didn't go to St. Joe's expecting or even looking for an ultimate team, to be honest. But it definitely was, you know, my tightest group of friends and the friends I still have now.
So this is an interesting point too, because I think that your experience is a little bit different than a lot of other players and is actually an experience we expect to see more of, which is a transition from high school to college to pro. Now you've played now with Patrol at sort of the high level nationals club level, which I understand was a great experience. You guys had a great year this year. But you hadn't really played at that kind of level of club prior to coming and playing for the Spinners. Whereas a lot of the players that we have in the MLU have, they sort of come out of that high level, I guess you would say, the sort of top tier club teams. So what do you think of the difference in experiences there? Like it seems to reflect sort of a more traditional sports path, right? You play in high school, you play in college, you go play pro. Do you think this is something we're going to see more of? How do you think that reflects? Like, what do you think the experience was for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, and to backtrack a little bit, you know, after that high school season, I was able to make the Devil YCC team, which was a U19 team ended up competing at nationals. And I was really lucky to be on that roster with some really talented guys, some guys that are, you know, playing in the MLU
Let's
now.
Let's name drop a little bit here.
Trent Dillon, Quinn Hunziker, Matt Weintraub, Isaac Saul. You know, there's a handful of names, and that roster was just chock full of talent. So I was, again, you know, just one of those D-line guys who wasn't allowed to throw more than 10 yards.
I'm familiar with that role.
Yeah. but, yeah, I mean, you know, with the pro leagues being so young, I think, you know, that path there's a lot of different ways to take that path. It's not, you know, I'm going to play high school, I'm going to go college, I'm going to play club, and then I'm going to go pro. You know, there's a lot of different ways, as we've seen from me and from other people that are on the team, you know, to get to that point and get to where they want to go.
Yeah, and I think it's great. I think that the idea that there are so many paths and that there's so many opportunities to play is fantastic. We could, you know, you're a good example of this, where you take a player who, you know, relatively raw coming out of high school, you have enough chances to go play and go get better that, you know, you now are allowed to throw more than 10 yards, I think, right? Is that true?
Yeah. I mean, I guess for better or worse, you know, being someone with experience in college, I was kind of expected to be a thrower, and we had a really strong senior class when I was a freshman. So when all those guys graduated, I kind of just became a handler without really knowing how to do it. So that definitely improved my throws, but it also gave me a lot of confidence to kind of be aggressive and take the shots.
You know, trial by fire, right? You just get thrown into it. That's the best way to do it a lot of the time. So I'm going to go back. I'm going to jump back a little bit to the tryout thing. We were talking a bit earlier. So it's one thing, you know, we have the returning players like you and a lot of the guys on that Spinners team last year who, you know, formed that kind of great group that had a good run last year. Then we have these young kids coming out, or some of these unknown kids coming out. And then we have a few people sort of coming back around from previous years, and we've talked particularly about Brando. And I'm wondering if you might want to talk a little bit about him. We'll just give him a little plug here, give him a little shout, build him up, if you will.
Yeah.
More than it needs, it does. So you can tell him right to the camera.
Yeah, hopefully Brando's listening. But, you know, I watched him play in 2013, 2014, and he has, you know, a pretty well-known name in the Philly community. And he was coming back from an ACL tear, so he was coaching for the Phoenix last year.
Right.
But he, you know, worked very, very hard for his recovery and was at full strength for patrol. And he kind of fit in very seamlessly to what we were doing on offense there. And so seeing him at tryouts and knowing what he can do with the disc and just as a teammate is really, really encouraging. I'm really excited to, you know, have him on board.
So what is that going to do then to get, let's get a little technical here for fun. What do you think that's going to do for the Philadelphia Spinners offense this coming year? Like, what was missing last year that Brando is going to be able to bring?
I mean, last year, I think our offense was very efficient and almost conservative to a point. You know, we made a lot of throws and were very, you know, safe with our decision making. Brando is not afraid to take shots downfield, to break the mark, and he's an absolute nightmare to cover. He's a lot smaller than I am, but he can really you know, wiggle his way open. So I think from a reset standpoint, he's a very reliable option there. But as a downfield cutter, you know, I'm excited to just be able to create some space and some tight windows, but also some, you know, wider windows down the field for him to throw into.
Excellent. So looking at that, right? So you're out of tryouts, you're seeing these new players, you're seeing Brando come out, you got obviously a lot of your veterans are back out. You have a new coach this year.
Right.
You know, and this is a big change. You know, Billy was a fantastic coach. Billy Maroon, I think, has been a fantastic coach in the league for the last 3 years. You know, over the 3 years, has built the team and gotten sort of an improvement out of the team each year.
Yeah.
Has had to move on for reasons outside of the team itself, and we brought in Daryl. And can you tell me a little bit about this new coach and how you feel things are going to change with him, or how you feel he's going to augment what you guys already do, both in the as the spinners and the core group who also plays with patrol?
Sure. Well, I guess first off, Billy was a great coach and gave me a lot of confidence to kind of go out and do what, you know, I was doing at the college level. And he was a really good leader and was instrumental in, you know, our success last year. Daryl, I've known since playing summer league back a few years ago, but he's been involved with the Philly scene for a long time. He's seen the way that we play last year and was involved with Citywide Special, which is the sort of feeder team to patrol, and that's the team that I played for a year back. I'm really excited to speak with Daryl. I've already had plenty of conversations with him about sort of you know, what the offense is going to look like, how I fit into that. It's really intriguing. He's just always thinking about it, always talking about it. I think, you know, you're going to see a little bit different of an offense from Philly, but one that's going to be pretty successful.
So, yeah, I think we're all excited about seeing what you guys bring onto the field next year. I think that in general, there's, you know, going to be a lot of kind of strategic shifts in what people are doing next year.
Right.
And I'm interested, too, in how those shifts have played out for you personally as you're moving from, you know, from the college game, maybe some of the club game, into the pro game. And we talked a little bit about this. We're going to skip the big obvious thing. Like, we could talk about refs some other time, but I'm tired of it. It seems like every time we get on these conversations, how do you feel about referees? I find that, like, most people have it's varied opinions, but
right.
we've talked about that enough.
I've had plenty of conversations myself.
Yeah, so let's talk about a couple of the other things. One thing that always comes up when I talk to players but is not maybe discussed as commonly in sort of the, I guess, the bigger public sphere of Ultimate, however public that is the idea of the single game format. You know, in club and in college, generally you're playing in a tournament format where you're playing three, four games a day, and sort of whittling it down to a final game after the end of a weekend. Whereas obviously in the pro game, you're going and playing a game in the weekend, maybe two if you're on a road trip. What do you think about that difference? What do you like about it? What don't you like? How does that feel having come out of the more tournament-based system?
Yeah, I think in college playing, you know, seven games in a weekend is great for certain things. It's great for being able to bond together with your team and get a ton of reps. But you're exhausted and, you know, you can only give it so much for 8 hours a day, 2 days in a row. And it's not to say that I'm any less tired after a spinners game because I am. but I think the one game format is a... You know, it's a good shift from what we see in other sports, and I think from my experience with soccer, it's one game, and you're just focused on that game, and everyone is completely dialed in, and there's really no, okay, you know, we can sort of mail this game in, go to the next one, and it won't really have an effect on our season. So I think overall, I really like the format just because you get so geared up for it. You know, you're especially if you're away, you're traveling a few hours on the bus and you're just really focused about it. But I think for our game, it's really important to kind of focus on that one game format.
Yeah, I thought about this a lot too. In high school, were you playing mostly tournament format or were you playing single games against other teams?
We got a few like single game scrimmages just to get some practice during the week, but the tournaments that we went to and sectionals or states, I should say, were all tournament format.
Yeah, and I don't have anything against tournament format from an overall perspective. I think you're right. I think it offers, like, they can be fun, you know, a good time to bond with the team, good things like that. I think that the thing that attracts me about the single game format, not just at the MLU level, because it's obvious there, but at the youth level, is the opportunity for people to come out and watch the game is really nice. It's hard to go watch a tournament. I remember when I played in college, I think my parents came to sectionals 1 year, and they're on a little lawn chair, like out in the middle of this field, like trying to watch a game that they don't really understand what's going on. And, you know, very supportive parents. It was great to have them there. But at the same time, afterward, I'm like, you don't have to come tomorrow. You don't have to do it again. I really appreciate you being out here. But, you know, whereas I, you know, when I played soccer and when I've played other sports and there's stands to sit in and there's somebody telling them what's happening, be that an official or an announcer or something like that, I feel like the game just is easier to consume, easier to watch, easier to enjoy, and I think it brings more people in. So from my perspective, even outside of the MLU, I'd really like to see more of these sort of single game matchups happening, whether they're between club teams or between college teams or particularly between high school teams, because how great would it be for the Ultimate team to have a game on Friday night under the lights, you know, and to get out in front of their, not just their family but their friends, have people be able to come out and watch what they do. Because we know that once people see it, they're impressed by it.
Yeah.
So let's get people out there and let them see what it looks like.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, playing in college, my family really wasn't able to come down to a tournament. And, you know, if they see one game, maybe I only get, you know, 50% of the points in that game. And then they have to go.
And just 50%. I only get 50% of the points. Maybe I'm not playing every point. That would be disappointing for them. All right.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, that first spinners game, I keep coming back to it because, you know, I had around 40 or 50, like, relatives, friends, family, you know, past teammates.
Quite a cheering
section.
That
were there. Oh, it was amazing. But I don't think that if I was, you know, traveling to regionals even, and I told all my friends, hey, you know, I have this tournament that's 8 hours long, please come watch me play, that they would be as interested. So I think it's much easier to consume, and it's much easier to understand what's going on within the context of the game.
Yeah, definitely. And don't get me wrong. Like, I think the tournament format makes a lot of sense for what's going on right now in college. Makes a lot of sense for what's going on in club. Allows you to get a lot of games in a short amount of time.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the end, creates a competitive format that's fun and interesting. I don't have anything against it. I do think, though, like you, from a personal perspective, that by the end of the weekend, I felt like the matchups were not, you know, everybody's playing on the same level. I get it. You know, there's the guy I'm covering has been running all weekend too.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the dynamics of that matchup were simplified because it was just gritting it out at that point. There wasn't as much variation in what we were trying to do.
Yeah, I agree. And again, you know, once you get to the nationals or once you get to you know, any sort of stage like that, they're really segmenting the game so that you know, for the semis and finals, for instance, at club nationals, those are just one game. Like, those teams don't have any other games that day.
That's great.
And, you know, if they were playing a few games before then and then were also asked to play in a championship, I think it would be a little bit tougher to watch because, as you said, you know, everyone is just grinding it out and, you know, they're already exhausted and, you know, they're pushing through, but it makes for a much better overall game and performance if you know that everyone is fresh. And this is the one game that they're focusing on from a matchup standpoint and everything else like that.
I think finals was like that when I played. I don't know if semifinals was. I think we played a few games before the semifinals. I don't know. Maybe one of my former teammates can help me, Pike Fellows. But I, you know, my memory's not great. But, yeah, it was nice that finals is like set apart and pulled out so that you can focus a little bit more on it. But it's still the end of a long 4 days. And, yeah, you know, the injuries pile up and it, you know, call it a compressed season. But, yeah, looking at, you know, tournaments and particularly fun tournaments, you get on a Fool's Fest, things like that, it's great. You hang out with your friends all weekend, you sit around on the sidelines, yeah, you party at night, and you have a good time. And I think there's tons of place for that still in the game, and it should be there. But I also think the single-game format needs more attention and needs to be elevated a little bit. The other thing that we talked a little bit about was the size of the field in the MLU. It's obviously a significantly bigger field. We're talking, yeah, you know, 53 yards across, 120 long, you know, 20 yard end zones on each side. How did that affect you as a player when you first started? How is it in the long run? Like, what do you feel about this?
I get this a lot, and I think at first it seems a little bit bigger than you're used to, and that's to be expected. But I think everyone is still playing under the same conditions. And I think that on defense, you have a little bit more ground to cover. But at the same time, that space is being occupied a little bit quicker. And I think going from the spinner season to patrol season, it's noticeable. But I don't see any difference in the way that teams play or the tactics that they use, whether it's the force or, you know, how they're guarding you one way or the other. I really didn't feel like that was much of a difference. And once you're out there and you're playing the game, you know, it didn't have too much of an effect, I don't think.
Now, do you think that's a long-term thing that we're going to see, or do you think teams are going to start to identify ways to use the MLU field better tactically? I mean, we know teams use the smaller club field well by compressing the field and and forcing people into one area of the field and right. making it messy and condensed. Like that's a tactic that a lot of people use. Whereas offense's ability to spread out is a little bit more difficult. Do you think we're going to see an evolution in tactics at the pro level that we haven't seen yet, or do you think we've started to get to where we're going to be?
Absolutely. I think you see a lot of shift even at the club level. Teams playing a sort of junky zone, sort of hybrid man zone kind of thing. But on the pro side, I think there's definitely room for a zone or some sort of different type of tactic outside of just straight up man that would work really effective. And it really only takes one team to kind of do it and kind of run with it. And then other teams will probably start to follow suit. So I think, speaking from the spinners, I know we did a lot of different things to try and slow down different plays. It's something that's constantly evolving. And using that space wisely on offense is going to be negated by whatever the defense is trying to take away.
Yeah, I think of Boston and Seattle as both having some really effective kind of zony, call them junky looks that would throw off pull plays. It's going to be really interesting to see. I actually am envious of the big field. I never got to play on it, and now I'm way too out of shape. But
working on it,
the idea of having that kind of room to not only on offense but on defense to sort of set up the kind of cuts you want to try to get a block on and the kind of way you want your player to move, getting rid of the number of picks, which were always the most frustrating thing as a defender. I hated pick calls. Like my teammate would call a pick call when I felt like I had that in-cut set up really well for a block, and it gets exhausting. So I don't know. I'm excited to see how that develops over time. The last thing that we talked about a little bit that I want to get into really quick as we finish up is I want to go into something we talked about a little, and that's coaching. So in high school, you had a coach?
Right, yep.
And then you transitioned to college, no coach?
No coach. So I had one head coach in high school, Blaine. Hopefully you're watching this. Thank you for everything. And then I had actually Anthony Nunez, who is the Rumble coach
who
was my Devil coach. But then I went for 4 years at St. Joe's, pretty much, at schools like St. Joe's, everyone is kind of coaching themselves and kind of working it on your own. So it was a nice sort of burden to take off of myself when you have a lot of different things on your plate and having a coach that can just say, go out and play. Don't worry about anything else.
And you've actually taken that and gone and taken that burden off of other people. You this year are coaching the St. Joe's team, right?
Right. Yeah. The Dirty Birds. So, I realized how much juggling you have to do when you're coaching or trying to run practice or captaining. Like while you're trying to play, while you're trying to get better, and I knew that the guys that were on the team and the guys that they were recruiting, they deserve to have an extra pair of eyes or multiple people who are helping out who have other experience. It just felt like I gave so much to St. Joe's and I got so much out of it that I wanted to give it back to them in some way and It's been really fun in the fall and looking forward to the spring in terms of what we can do. And coaching really gives me sort of a new perspective and a new way to think about things on the big picture level. Because a lot of the time I just kind of put my head down and just want to, win my matchup and that's that. But you need to always be aware of what you're doing and how that affects, everyone else on the field.
So you'd say then that coaching actually helps your game as a player then too?
Absolutely. When I'm trying to explain a certain position or a certain play or some sort of nuance within the game, being able to talk it out and being able to explain it clearly to someone who doesn't have as much experience, especially a rookie playing his first game in college, it makes you really sort of sit down and think about what you're doing, and is that the best thing to do? Is it something that you need to tweak, or have I just been doing it as a result of habit, and you know, maybe it's not the best thing to do?
All right. Well, you heard it here, everybody. If you want to be a better player, go be a better coach. So get out there, coach up some youth, teach them what to do. Good luck with the both the spinners and with the Dirty Birds this coming spring. Look forward to hearing how they do. And you can get me at Nick Darling on Twitter.
At Billy Sickles MLU.
There you go. Reach out. Ask any questions that you have. We'll see you next time on Cleats and Cufflinks.